Insecurity Podcast. And Vicky's fight to the last. Inside and the know-how. We take the challenge now.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Security MVP Insight Series within the Talking Security Podcast. I am Frans Uijdendorp, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Pujan Gabazi. We're excited to bring you the latest episode in our series. We'll continue to explore the ever-evolving world of cybersecurity.
Thanks, Frans. Indeed, in this series, we delve into global and local cybersecurity challenges, provide expert insights on emerging trends, and showcase innovative solutions from our security MVPs. As for today's episode, we have an exceptional guest with us. Mona Radiri is a highly respected senior director of product management at BlueFoyant and a Microsoft Security MVP. Mona is a passionate thought leader fostering the managed detection and response revolution in cybersecurity using Microsoft Sentinel, 365 Defender, and Defender for Cloud.
And don't forget Security Copilot. And in addition to her role as a senior director of product management, Mona is a distinguished speaker, contributing to numerous industry events and publications. We're thrilled to have her on the show and look forward to her valuable insights. So let's dive into our conversation. Mona, welcome to the Security MVP Insights.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to participate.
Yes, thanks. We are very enthusiastic to have you here. And to kick things off, could you tell us a bit about your background and the journey in the cybersecurity field that you had?
Yeah, absolutely. So what might be surprising is I'm actually an anthropology history double major, an undergrad, and I have a master's in business administration from the University of Illinois. So I have a little bit more of that non-traditional cybersecurity background. In fact, after college, I had a whole career as a manufacturing engineer working in plastics. And so I was an assembly engineer and a process engineer that would help auto manufacturers dream up new cars and then make them into real life things. And so what I learned from that experience was that while I really like the idea of making things, I'd much rather be making software. And so I pivoted into software development and into cybersecurity software solutions more specifically about 10 years ago. And I've been really interested in this idea that I don't think that there are enough people to solve our problems in cybersecurity. And I think that one of our answers needs to be managed services, or thinking about how do we supercharge our experts so that they can do a better job helping protect us from those bad baddies who are always evolving and always changing their methodologies. So it sounded like an interesting problem. And I got bit by the bug of Microsoft about 5 years ago when Microsoft Sentinel came out. And I realized the innovative nature of a cloud-based SIM and what it could really do for managed services. And so, I got bit by the bug of Microsoft. You could consider me to be a cybersecurity person who came into Microsoft, not an IT person who came into cybersecurity who came into Microsoft. But I think it means that I like to be bilingual. And so it means I speak Splunk and I speak Sentinel. And it also means that I speak Farsi in addition to speaking English. So I think it's really important kind of as a cybersecurity professional and as somebody who is always evolving and always learning to be pushing at all of those different boundaries that continue to make us grow and help us protect those who can't protect themselves.
Amazing. That's a really great story, Mona. And the coincidence is that we had also Sana on the show, and she has also a background from automotive industry and switched to cybersecurity on a later moment as well. I like you. It's funny to see that. So, Mona, you talked about, I mean, we know you from a lot of Microsoft security technologies, and you mentioned that definitely you are working a lot with automation on top of that. Are there any primary areas of focus that you are really aiming for when it comes to Microsoft cybersecurity technology at this moment?
Absolutely. So, we've got the innovation of Copilot for Security, right? That's kind of taken over my brain since last, I think, August. BlueFoyant was one of the first companies in the world to be tapped by Microsoft to help innovate and kind of nurture out of that private preview program that some of you guys are familiar with, and the customer connection program that I think many of you probably participate in. There's usually a ring before it gets to private preview. And so it's at that point where we've been working with Microsoft on things like, how do we authenticate as a third party? How do we deploy prompt books as a third party? How do we kind of think about the managed services, right, of the content that's going to be in Copilot for Security? So I've really been trying to think about the life cycle, or almost the DevOps world, that needs to go alongside Copilot for Security, not for the infrastructure, but actually for the content.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, Copilot for Security, I think we all can agree, it's a really a great platform, which adds a lot of functionalities. It's not where it needs to be, maybe, on some ends. But it's great to see that you are really focusing on that topic as well. Are there any specific examples that you can share with us, maybe, when it comes to Copilot for Security?
Yeah, so for those of you guys who aren't familiar with BlueVoyant, we have published a diagram that just shows the inner workings of Copilot for Security, the different ways you can kind of manifest those. And we'll post the link for you guys in the show notes. But we've also been working on some new prompt books for customers. And we've been trying to think through, what if we reverse engineered the front end APIs of Copilot for Security? What can it do? Can we uncover some future considerations that we maybe could think about in terms of deploying these prompt books, maybe more than one at a time? Or think about kind of what the life cycle again looks like of a plugin for a third party product, right? So we've been looking and investigating at, how do you build, custom plugins? How do you build prompt books? How do you trigger them from, things like other automation things that we're more comfortable with, like function apps and logic apps? But I think we're just, to your point, seeing the beginning of what Copilot for Security is. I was talking with a customer and kind of likening it to the first iPhone, right? The first iPhone was life-changing, right? I was a BlackBerry user, right? And it was a different UI. It was a different way of experiencing the world. Did everybody buy it? Was it easily available to everyone? No. It was still pretty expensive, right? It was still kind of a first, people who were testing it were into it. Didn't have a good camera. And you think about today's iPhone, and what are the features people value, right? They're not the same ones as the first iPhone. And it took us several iterations to get there. Do I think it's going to take as long as the iPhone to get to, what good or better looks like? No, because we've fundamentally changed even the way we do software development with GitHub, Copilot for GitHub, or these types of other things. So that adoption curve and that development curve is changing significantly. But I can't think of anything more interesting than staying alongside this evolving technology, because I think just like the iPhone was that first iteration, some people were like, what? I have a phone in my house. I don't even need this. Yeah. Right. And now who has a landline? Right. It's those types of fundamental changes and ways of experiencing your house that's going to change, So I think that's what I'm most excited about.
And talking about these kind of examples, projects that you're working on.
An example. Yeah. So we had a customer who wanted to do email investigations, and they essentially were going to 6 different portals within Microsoft. Right. Because they started with the email investigation. They started maybe in Defender. Right. And then maybe from there, they went to Sentinel, and maybe from Sentinel, they went to Entra ID, and from Entra ID, they went to Purview, and from Purview, they did some MDTI queries. And then, the analyst still had to do a bunch of more KQL queries after you figure out all of this information. So what we did was we said, how can we investigate a suspicious email, use all of these Microsoft tools like Entra, Defender, Sentinel, Purview, MDTI, and how do we actually incorporate other things that that Copilot for Security can do, like call GPT skills, and kind of create almost like a Russian nesting doll approach, where we start with skills and essentially tie these skills into each other, and really from a plugin perspective, mostly focus on Defender, Sentinel, Entra, things that kind of already exist out of the box. So we're doing things like getting the sender domain history, the email attachment history, the URL click history. We're then going to Entra and looking for login data. Where do they come from? What is their user risk? What applications have they accessed? We do the device used to perform the sign-in. So all the kind of like, is this a trusted device? Is this an enrolled device? What kind of compliance status does it have? And then we kind of pivot over to, like I said, what does Purview have? What about the risk associated with any of the users? And now once we have all those entities, right, we're only halfway through the prompt book, by the way. We're going now into saying, okay, well, did these entities have any security alerts other than this one, Fire and Sentinel, for that user? Or like, did it get through, right? And then additionally, from that email, we start looking for fraud or phishing, URL links, trying to understand if this is an impersonation or a sort of lookalike domain. Those types of things would come up in this point. And then, like I said, at the end, we have a summary and we're saying, yes, this is bad. This is a user compromise. Use the blast radius. And you can get to the point where we're actually recommending things to do. What kind of actions should they take? Right. And this is not necessarily to ever say that Copilot for Security should take those actions. We're actually saying that's not the case. But I just want to make sure that somebody knows what available actions, you know, there are that they could take. And then the last step of the prompt is actually to give the analyst three new prompts to allow them to continue to escalate or investigate that incident. So we're not leaving them with the summary. We're actually leaving them with more prompts, which I think is also very unique, kind of as you think about this. So, you know, if you think about what Microsoft's out of the box investigation does for like an M365 Defender kind of use case, right? We're looking at a much shorter list of things, right? We're saying, oh, well, can you tell me what the incident ID is and what the entities are and the authentication methods? But it's very, very generic. What we kind of put together is way more hyper-specific to email specific investigations. And I think, like I said, like that whole thing takes 12 minutes to run on average. How much time did it take you to do your latest email investigation, Puyan? Days? How many people did you have to ask for help? What's the organization?
Depends. Well, we have also ourselves a high level of automation, but yeah, those things are really hard and you have a lot. But I think what I really love about the solution you are working on is like, this is something we discussed with Matthias, I believe, as well. It's like, we come along from Sentinel and our detections, and suddenly we were from our detections to Copilot for Security, and there was like a gap in between, and that was our triage, where we didn't know actually how to do really SOAR, right? We called a lot. We are doing SOAR, but we're actually always doing a little bit of integration with your ticketing system and that kind of stuff. And you guys, and if I can sum it a little, is you are trying to bring SOAR to Copilot for Security a little bit and to build that as a full...
Yeah, think about it as another tool in your SOAR, right? So I think you have the idea, right, that you could have a Sentinel SOAR... Actually, and you could call Copilot for Security in that Logic app, right? And have it go do something for you, right? Or you can have this case, right, where a Logic app could be serving actually the incident ID or could be providing that from Sentinel or from, you know, another source where you have that. So I think to your point, yes, I think where you think about where things go in or where things go out, it's all still automation, right? These are function apps. These are Logic apps. These are things we are familiar with. You know, I think what the difference is how do you... you know, get that fine line between verbosity and having it be a really expensive query versus not asking it enough and then having to ask it five or six more questions to not get the right answer. I think that's where I want to figure out the right answer. I don't know if you guys are familiar. In the United States, they call them Mad Libs, but it's like a sentence with gaps. It's missing the verb. It's missing the adjective. It's missing the noun. I think that's the future of Copilot for Security. People want these concepts of like a Mad Libs where they only have to fill out 2, 3, 4 things and the automation will do the rest, or it will execute the steps kind of on its own. And I see the first little pieces of that really in Copilot for Security. And I think that's the right methodology. But our vision is that, you know, I want to build a Mona's Book of the Month Club where you can get 2 prompt books a month from Mona. And you know, I'll talk to you about it for 10 or 15 minutes. This is why I built the prompt. This is how it works. These are the ways that you do it. But for the next year, really just focus on introducing good prompts that are repeatable, that people can use and know how much it's going to cost and know that it's worth it, right? This email investigation case, right, I think is a really good one because it's really expensive to do these by themselves. You usually need specific analysts who know how to look at emails. You can't have a regular analyst necessarily do a really deep email investigation. You don't want to flip these over to IR every time because they're not always, you know, true. And especially in the cases of user submitted phishing emails, right? Like it's like an 8% success rate of people actually catching phishing. It's like 92% garbage, right? And so that's why I think something like Copilot for Security is such a good use case for, because we haven't built the automation. The APIs don't exist. That we don't have the ability to do this with Defender for Office today out of the box, right? So for me, it makes a lot of sense to say, oh, well, actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to make this work with Proofpoint or Mimecast or Microsoft by saying it's actually relying on the tables in Sentinel. So again, like we kind of tried to circumvent as many things that make this complicated as possible and get this to something that's repeatable, that it doesn't matter what the customer is leveraging. They just need that verb or they need that noun, right, in the sentence. And they can have a laugh or a cry or whatever they decide they want to have in their sentence.
And the question that is on top of my mind at the moment is, from a technology perspective, super fun that we can do that nowadays. But from a business perspective, what kind of challenges do we try to address? Is that the time that we need to respond? Is that knowledge from the analysts that are working on the security products? What challenges are we trying to address?
Absolutely. I think we're trying to address a time to value problem, right? Which is you can deploy all these tools and then you have to have an alert. And then only when the alert fires can you, you know, see if X, Y, or Z thing is going to happen. And then only after that can you determine a severity. And only after that are we actually ready to talk to a person. Like there's so many things, right? It's almost like the relay race of our lives. Or I was, another good example is there was a commercial in the United States where it's a little owl and it's got a Tootsie Pop in its hand. And the owl is sitting there and it's licking the Tootsie Pop, trying to get to the Tootsie Pop center. And it just sits there and it goes, you know what? Lick, lick, crunch. And it just bites it in half. And it says, you know what? I'm not going to waste my time trying to get to the center, right? That's the business problem we're trying to solve. Nobody should sit and lick a lollipop for 3 days to figure out whether there's anything in the middle of it or not. We would never ask anybody to do that in a regular, right? I would never hire Puyan to sit and lick a lollipop for 3 days and tell me whether or not there's anything in the middle. I would pay Puyan to tell me, lick, lick, crunch. I'm serious. That's what I would pay him for, right? Because sitting there and having an analyst do the functional equivalent of licking a lollipop or licking a window or a door handle or whatever, you know, metaphor you want to use is a waste of time and a waste of effort, right? So the goal here is to get to that lick, lick, crunch, get to the actual meat of what you need to make a decision, not spend time triaging, not spend time validating, not spend time, you know, trying to, go and ask six different groups for help. Just in this use case alone, I didn't have to go to ask an identity management team anything. I didn't have to go to the compliance team and ask them anything. And yet still I, as a SOC analyst, got the best of what their tools have to offer me in the investigation case that I really care about. Now, what's the problem with that? Well, if this DLP stuff is set up shitty or this they didn't, you know, do their configurations right. You know, when I worked in manufacturing, they used to say you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit. Bad garbage in is garbage out, right? So if as much as I love this idea and I love this email use case, right? If Purview's not set up correctly, if Defender's not set up correctly, you don't have the configuration pieces in place first, you're going to get bad outcomes because you're going to get garbage data with malformed ideas and you're going to sit back and say, why didn't this work? Or this AI thing sucks. Well, it kind of does, you know, in some ways, but it doesn't suck for the reason that you think it does, right? I was making a joke with the global black belts and I said, okay, if you're an alien and you're coming into my house and I say, I need to find my toothbrush, it's a stick with bristles on it. What else in your bathroom could it be other than a toothbrush? A toilet brush, right?
Yeah,
and definitely. And I have to come back to you and say, I brought you this thing. It has sticks and bristles. Aren't you proud of me? Can you be mad at it? Can you be mad at it? No, you can't.
I mean, that's the general challenge, right? What we are facing, not only in cybersecurity. I mean, from one side is the overload of data, I was a couple of weeks ago in a micro presentation where they showed like average enterprise organizations have like 50 to 70 security tools running around. It's like the overload or maybe the complexity that that brings with it as well. I mean, we are not even focusing on if it is correctly configured or not, but the scale size with cloud, everything fully changed completely. We are suddenly behaving as definitely as much enterprise organization completely differently to traditional.
Oh, yeah. And sites. I think it's definitely people are stepping back and saying, oh, am I supposed to plug in all of my security tools to Copilot for Security, or am I supposed to leave them in my SIM, or like what am I supposed to do? And I think it's really important for people to step back and say, you can't replace your SIM with Copilot for Security. It's not there to do that. Yeah. It's not making scheduled queries, it's not running, you know, analytics. It's providing you a method to reason over that data, right? And the greatest thing I think about Copilot for Security that they did right with the plugins is that you can be very granular about what tables, right, you want the AI to be able to reason over, right? You don't have to let it reason over all of the tables just because that's the way Microsoft built it. If you decided you want to cordon off and have it only run on these custom tables or only run on these Microsoft tables or whatever, right, you can build your own plugin that custom in a custom way, you know, does those kinds of things. So I think there's a lot more flexibility. But to your point, right, when people are like, well, where do I plug in all this stuff? I really focus on plugging Copilot for Security to the things that are kind of functioning as your databases, right? Whether that's knowledge databases or things like Confluence, or, you know, if you have your stuff in, you know, some sort of other knowledge repository, wherever your IR plans are or wherever you're saving, like that kind of stuff, I think that's really important. Yeah. Right? Things like your SIM, where data is being stored, I think is important. Places where your identities are being stored, right? Like Entra or Okta or whatever, right? Those things are really important. But they're not replacements for your SIM. You're allowing data in those databases to be reasoned over with the AI.
So if you focus on a global scale today, Mona, what do you see as one of the biggest cybersecurity? I think we can agree that AI is a risk with it as well. But what's in your opinion a big risk that what do you foresee for coming period, maybe even?
Yeah, I would say there's two directions. Like, what are we seeing right now? It's all identity. Pretty much everybody is like compromising credentials, either using business email compromise or man in the middle or attacker in the middle types of use cases. Those are going crazy, right? And I think Microsoft has done some really amazing things with attack disruption. Bringing more of that, like if they have a really, really high confidence that something bad is happening, do something about it. I think that's great that Microsoft is doing that, right? So at least for some of those, like, you know, credential harvesting or those types of things, right, as they can catch it closer to it happening, that's, you know, that's obviously fantastic. I think there are also kind of this other side of things, which is what we call third-party risk, right? This idea that, you know, in the Target breach, it wasn't Target that did anything wrong. It was their HVAC supplier. Right? It's whoever the weakest link is that's closest to that entity who already has established credentials or access. And then we just jump back to the other side, right? Which is, let's harvest those credentials. Let's get those credentials. Yeah. They're coming in kind of through either this, what I'll call internal method, right? Where they're coming in and they're, you know, faking a Microsoft login page, or they're, you know, doing something where they're, you're phishing somebody in some sort of other fashion. They are coming from this, you know, I'm going to someone you already trust. And if you trust them, then it's just about me compromising their security. I don't actually have to break in, you know, to BlueVoyant. I can break into one of BlueVoyant's suppliers or whatever you would think about. So I think if we kind of consider, how do we use this as a claw motion, right? How do you both consider the cybersecurity risks that are involved with who you trust? And are they patching their vulnerabilities like they should, right? I don't want them to be getting in the easy way just because we didn't patch some system. Right. But that's a very different problem than what we're seeing on the inside. Right. Which is not devices. It's not those, you know, that what we saw 5 years ago with EDR. It's everything has moved to the cloud. To your point, Puyan, everything is, you know, done via SaaS apps or these shared lock authentications or different weird, you know, on behalf of authentications or service accounts. Right. And I think that you have to attack that risk internally very differently. We need to do things like shorten our token lengths, right, to the duration of a workday, or maybe that's overkill. I like an 8-hour extension, you know, be done. But I know, like, pretty much everybody in the world would be like, Mona, that's insane. I also think about things like number matching, right? You know, Microsoft has done a lot in the MFA range, right, to go kind of beyond that two-factor authentication, or you know, if you really want to get super exciting, right, doing YubiKeys or other sorts of passwordless authentication with Windows Hello. But I think that there are, you kind of have to approach these two problems at the same time, but with different stakeholders and kind of to different end business outcomes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that completely. I think, we normally say here, I don't know if you guys use it in the US as well, but we say a lot here about the customers, like hackers log in these days. They don't do anything else than log in the scene. And they are. And I think what you are saying, and I think France is working on that kind of solutions a lot as well, but creating multiple perimeters by if they log in, okay, they don't have the rights. But, and for that, they need to do PIM. And we have conditional exam. Just make it as hard as possible. That.
Yeah, pimming in and out of, you know, nobody has you know, permanent security roles. Everyone should have to pim in and out of that stuff. Is it a pain in the ass?
You wish nobody have it.
But is it the right thing to do security-wise? Yes, right? I mean, standing access, standing permissions, to your point, right? They just log in. Yeah. At least let's make it hard for them.
What do you think of the chain responsibility? This week we saw some exciting things around CrowdStrike. That was not exciting actually, but it was on a Windows system. CrowdStrike wasn't organizing the problem, the blue screens. So I think within the chain we have different responsibilities. How do you see that for the future?
Yeah, I think the software supply chain concept and kind of what responsibilities do we have to know about what our suppliers or what our partners are using, I think is changing. You know, I think what used to be okay was, you know, Puyan, do you have an EDR? Cool, great. That's enough. But I think what we're finding now, right, like it matters more about how you actually approach your cybersecurity technology stack, right? Some of these legacy folks who've had, you know, 50 years worth of tech debt have a much different problem that they have to solve than, you know, somebody who was working at BlueVoyant, which is a born in the cloud MDR provider, right? So I think a lot of it is how much risk are you inheriting and like, what do you have to do with that? You know, if you still have on-prem Active Directory, right? Like, I think every MVP out there would be saying, like, do you really need this? Like, what are you doing with it? Like, we all decided we were gonna stop doing this, right? But you know, if you're thinking about this password revocation concept, or you're trying to think about AD syncing and password resets, right? Like that's a world of hurt that half people aren't even going to think about because they don't live in that world anymore. So I think we're all kind of challenged with, you know, are the vendors that we're working with ones that kept up, or are they ones that didn't, right? Are there ones that maybe are taking a better cybersecurity risk posture because they have fewer vendors? Yeah, I think we're going to start seeing that. And I think as much as people want to say, oh, no, I want all these different options and I want all of this choice, right? Choice comes with risk, right? And some people, they just don't want to eat the risk anymore. They'd rather outsource the risk, right? And outsourcing the risk to a provider like Microsoft or somebody who's running the tools like Microsoft, you know, it's looking more and more enticing, you know, as these days go by because of these software supply chain concerns. At least with Microsoft, you know, the whole thing is not going to go down. It's only going to be a part because they don't even all work together. So
even then, can it be a challenge? So I think within the cybersecurity area, and I think I totally agree with you, we need to collaborate with each other, not only from a consultant perspective helping customers, but also from a vendor perspective. And we have seen that with the SolarWinds, stuff. Well, Microsoft teamed up with the SolarWinds team with some other vendors as well. And I think the last few days with the CrowdStrike issue, the same thing happened.
Microsoft published, I thought, was a really great addition. And at least like you were saying, I saw some really great advanced hunting queries that got added to the GitHub recently too, just trying to determine those encrypted devices or, you know, which ones, you know, have the BitLocker problem. So yeah, I mean, I think you're right. We have to be a community. One of the reasons I believe in this idea of a managed detection response service is because it's a consortium. You get the benefit of being part of a larger group. And if something bad happens to someone else, you don't have to wait for it to happen to you and vice versa, right? I mean, I would love for everyone to be able to learn, you know, that we were victims of a potential social engineering attack at BlueVoyant just this last week because somebody tried to call in and pretend that they were CrowdStrike and talk to us. And we have a very strict policy where we hang up the phone and we call the support line back and say, were you trying to get a hold of us or not? Right? Where we don't give information over the phone just because somebody asks us. So I think the other part is vigilance, right? We all have a responsibility as cybersecurity professionals, citizens of the world, right? To trust but validate, right? Everyone is responsible for their own cybersecurity, right? You can't spell cybersecurity without you. The letter U, right? I think it goes back to this, this vision, right? That we're going to do our best to secure our perimeters and talk to our vendors and do, these B2B types of things, but each of us has a responsibility. And I don't think any of us, can point to Microsoft and say, or point to CrowdStrike and say, you guys have a problem. I think we have, an industry problem, and it's something that all of us have to be willing to acknowledge, right? The first step of, of recovery is acknowledging that you have a problem. And I think if nothing else, I think everyone has collectively kind of seen this issue, right? Where we don't want to just trust CrowdStrike to push these. We should have a gating process on our side. We should be able to say when we want to take updates or when we push things. We shouldn't just do what some other vendor says. So I think taking back some of our own responsibility is the other part of this.
Yeah, definitely. Are you gonna ask that question or do I?
Oh no, I wasn't there yet. So you can do that in a minute. Focusing on this, what I really also, because we ask that to all our guests until now as well, is when we are talking about supply chain attacks, etc. I mean, US is really, I believe the companies there are really adopting SPOM kind of process and technology a lot, like how you do share your vulnerabilities with your vendors as well. But are there any local regulations which is helping customers to pushing them or requiring them to go towards, because we do have that in Europe, for example. We had Thijs and other guys from Europe, Belgium. We do have here all kind of European laws that are forcing banks to have certain regulations, or government instances have certain that they need to have Sentinel, for example. Is it any movement in the US as well for that?
Yeah, so we just got our first mandatory reporting rule within the last year, right? Which is of a certain size, breaches, especially if you're a publicly traded organization, have to be made publicly known, which was not the case in the United States for a very, very long time. So I think that's a really big change. We also saw within the government space recently, the CMMC, Cybersecurity Maturity Model concept from what came out of what's called 800-171. This is the defense industrial base. So if you're providing anything to the US government, parts, services, whatever, you have to follow these particular rules. And they do include things like 24/7 monitoring, having a log management system, having identity and access management controls in place, right? And so we see a lot of places where, a good Microsoft implementation is going to already do a lot of these things. But we also, to your point, have more government regulations that say, if you don't follow these rules, you can't apply for a government contract, full stop. Right. Because we've seen so many of these mom and pop shops that were making, screws for the US government be the ones that, like I said, from a supply chain perspective, end up making their way into places that they shouldn't be. So there's government funding initiatives. There's a lot of seeing local funding that's been made available in the United States to protect, municipalities and water treatment, organizations and, any sort of critical infrastructure type things that are at the state and local level. There's a three-year plan, right, where the government funds a lot of it in the first year, then half of it, and then the idea is by year three, there's budget that's being set aside at the state and local government level to cover those services. But again, a very recent development. There's also a consortium of states in the United States that have all agreed on a similar shared vision for cybersecurity and how they implement it. And so those organizations, again, have different buying, capabilities and different, agreements with organizations like Microsoft, where, again, they can get special discounting programs, fast track types of deployments, things that really just help them get off the ground in the right way. But yeah, I think it's still very much, there are no teeth. We don't really have any sort of individual, I was involved in a breach. What do I have the right to, right? We don't have those types of things in the United States, like the right to be forgotten. So I think I would love to see, more advances in those things, but American privacy is a very, very different definition than European privacy. And I think until Americans wake up or realize convenience isn't worth it, right, we're not going to see the level of change. I mean, I literally just got a breach notification in the mail today that my credit card number and my data was already compromised. And I'm just like, cool, I already froze my credit. What else can I do? So I do think like at an individual level, there's still a lot of room for what I would call similar to like a passenger bill of rights, right? We have these rules for when people get on airplanes. And if you're stuck on the tarmac for more than 6 hours, you're entitled to a refund, right? There's nothing, no provisional things that as a user or as a an end customer, I have any rights to go back to a software provider or a services provider and say, you leaked my data, I want a refund. Or you should have to do more than just provide credit monitoring for me. And that's where I would really like to see, worldwide regulations go more in that direction, protect the end user. Because all of us, are just.
That's, I think, a really hard regulation to get in. I mean, for us European and then looking to the US from outside and then hearing all the stories about people suing all kind of companies because of all kind of stuff because it wasn't
in the description. Anyone in the United States, and it's so easy to sue people. They just throw that around.
So maybe they should think about that before people start suing everybody.
I mean, I think that the most recent case that just came through is that people who are working for a company, if their data is breached as part of a company breach, they have different rights than a user of that software. So there are, I would say more like employer requirements, I think, coming around. If you are an employee and your data is leaked as part of a breach and that company, you should be able to hold them liable for that. But that's because it's an employee-employer relationship, right? Not necessarily like a standalone one. I'm not an expert in law. None of this is legal advice. Please consult an actual, privacy practitioner in the United States, of which there are several. But my armchair observations in this case really are the best chance you have is if your employer is hacked and your data is leaked as part of that, you have some level of, repercussions that you can take in that case.
Yeah. Also, from a time perspective, we are running good in this recording. One thing that we do in every recording is the AI question. We give you some questions, you fill in the answers, and we use that to put it in ChatGPT, Copilot, whatever you name it, but then in AI. And AI was generating a question, and it is a very long one for you. So I will cut it in two pieces. Mona, it's fascinating to hear about your journey from a manufacturing engineer in injection molding to becoming a two-time MVP in Siemens XDR and cloud security. Given your extensive experience with Microsoft Sentinel and your current focus on SecOps and MDR, can you share some insights into how the Microsoft CCP program features and initiatives, especially Copilot for Security, are shaping the future of cybersecurity operations? That's the first piece.
So technically, you're not allowed to share anything that's from the CCP program. So I'm under NDA. Good try. I do think that in terms of what has just recently GA'd, right, the Unified SecOps portal, seeing that embedded experiences come to life and things like, Purview and Defender for Cloud and, Defender XDR have been incredible. I think they are exactly the types of things that we need to help make these different consoles more useful. I think what I dream of and the future of cybersecurity operations is that cybersecurity experts like you or me have the ability to push our content into these embedded experiences so that when you have an incident that's like this email example, if you had BlueVoyant, right, or you had, Friends's, content library for Copilot for Security, you could be the one that could serve up the right prompts. And you could be the one to customize what the experience of using those prompts looks like, before and after. And I think when we get to that point, right, we'll be closer to things like we see in Sentinel, right, where there's a marketplace and there's a place where you can design and develop content. Or you can get to a place where, like I said, my SOC analyst can look at my content instead of some other Microsoft sort of useful thing. But like, I hate that it pops up all the time. And I hate that I don't have any granularity in what shows up in the embedded experiences today. So I think there's still opportunities to make a difference or make that embedded experience better.
Yeah. And if you, as a listener, if you want to know more about the CCP program, if you are a customer, if you are a consultant working for a partner, whatever, you need to wait 2 more weeks, because after this recording, we have a recording with Pablo Chacon and Katie Rickman, and that it's more or less about the CCP program and how Microsoft collaborates with the community. And they give, you need to watch that or listen to that episode, because you get valuable insights of what the CCP program is.
So, yeah, I was one of the top 10 contributors to the CCP program multiple years in a row. So I can attest to the fact that being an avid participant is one of the things that even helped me get my MVP, right? So if you're also somebody who's listening in because you want to learn about the MVP program, you want to become part of the MVP program, a great way to showcase your community, kind of suggestions and participation are logging in, joining those communities, earning those badges that are part of the community, which I'm sure Katie and Pablo cover in their podcast. But it is a fantastic way to start getting involved and become part of what shapes our security future.
Yeah, definitely. Nice. And I have a second part of the AI question. Additionally, how do you balance your professional achievements with your personal interests, like baking sourdough bread and spending time with your daughter?
So the great thing about sourdough bread is it's a passive activity. So there's like little bursts and spits of things that you have to do. In fact, I have a loaf in my fridge I need to bake off. But I try to do that as something to slow me down. I live and work in a very fast-paced world. And having something that you can't control and it has to go slow and you have to pay attention to everything like humidity and temperature and time, there's so many variables that can affect your end outcome. There's always the twist or something always different in the way that you're doing. And I always prioritize spending time with my daughter. Does my daughter know I do Microsoft stuff and she's 5 years old? Absolutely. Nice. Does she think mom fixes viruses in the computer when the computers get sick? Also, yes. So, you got to meet her where she is, but, she's a fantastic kid. And I love spending time with her and love teaching her, about how to be safe on the internet and how to have fun at the playground. Cause they're the same thing in my mind. You got to have your brain on, right? You got to know what the rules are, and, you got to have safe, supportive people around you, to make sure that you have a good North Star. And that's why I'm so grateful for you two, right? And grateful for this community. Because it doesn't matter if you're 5 years old or 35 years old. It's nice having people you can talk to go off and do new things or change your perspective on things by having somebody ask you how to do something or think about something differently. So I'm really grateful for you guys.
Totally agree with that. You need some time not talking about technology and probably have some good times and talking about other things than the stuff where I usually do. Yeah, definitely.
So, Mona, thank you for the great input for our listener. I think it is adding a lot of added value, definitely when it comes to the Copilot. So for closing this episode, my final question would be for you is, what's for the coming period, your personal and professional goals? What do you have on your top 5 checkpoints or top 3?
I think one of the things I've realized is as far as women and MVPs and security, right? You talk to Santa, you talk to me. Really aren't a lot of us. So if you're a woman and you're doing Microsoft security stuff and you want to get involved, you want to grow your career, you want to change your life, reach out to me. I want to change your life because the MVP program has changed mine. And so much of this is access and who you know, because you have to get nominated and you have to know kind of the different ways to get through to different people, right? It's not easy. And I want one of my goals for the next year to get more female identifying MVPs in security, whether you're Sumo XDR, whether you're cloud security, whether you're identity, I don't care. We need more disparate voices, different voices. I would love to go to the next MVP summit and have to wait in line for the bathroom. I'm serious, right?
If we can organize that.
And for the ladies room, right? And I would love for one of the things to see the next MVP summit is I have to wait in line for the bathroom. I think the other things that I'm thinking about, you know, personally and professionally, right, are I think that being a change maker in this space is as much about elevating others. So what the other things I really want to do are find ways to bring more scenarios like this, where we're talking to other MVPs, we're having conversations about things that are kind of work, but also like current events and different things, because we just don't really have these kind of outlets. They don't exist. And I was so excited to get invited because there aren't these kinds of conversations available today. And there really should be. And then, you know, I think for myself, you know, my own professional goals, I would love to see Blue Boy and IPO. I would love to, you know, have us, you know, be, you know, the next big thing and show the world just how different cybersecurity can be when you have the right expertise and the right technology in place to get to those, that lick crunch, you know, let's focus on the outcomes, you know, problem that I think all of us really want to solve. So I think those are my top three kind of big goals.
Amazing goals. Let's see how we can help each other to achieve that. So
yes,
also definitely. Thank you for being here, for helping us. And if we can help you in achieving your goals, definitely more than happy to help.
Yes. Reach out, find me on LinkedIn, stay connected. I'm very friendly. I would love to connect with anybody who is listening to this podcast, who's just looking for community.
Thank you so much, Mona, for sharing your valuable insights and expertise with us today. It has been a fascinating conversation, in my opinion. Thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
For our listeners, if you want to learn more from Mona, she said it already, be sure to follow her on LinkedIn and other platforms, social platforms. And maybe you will see her on some conferences where she's presenting, or see her blogs and learn from her. If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to cover, please reach out to us through our website or social media channels. And thank you all for tuning in to this episode of the Security MVP Insights. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on the latest episodes. We'll be back soon with more expert insights and discussions on the world of cybersecurity. So I say, until next time, stay safe, stay secure.